But I think the biggest quality of a successful business owner, according to me, is the willingness and the ability to not be a control freak, but be a director or an orchestrator of turning the vision into a reality. The truth is, business is a game of progress, where version one is better than version none. A lot of people are being practitioners where they're doing stuff by themselves and are confusing themselves by calling themselves business owners. And they're actually building a trap of self-employment in the process. And then you'll feel this sense of regret and remorse saying, Kalyug aa gaya hai, hum jaise acche logon ko dhanda nahi mil raha hai, but jisko kuch nahi aata, wo log dhanda leke ja rahe. The person to blame is the person who's not marketing.
Welcome to the Growth Genius Podcast, brought to you by Infodigit, an organization that helps brands achieve organic growth via search engine optimization and conversion rate optimization. I'm Kaushal Kakkar, founder of Infodigit and your host for this show. Today, we have a guest who needs no introduction. He is the person who has been instrumental in creating the blueprint that helped my company Infodigit grow from 1 crore of annual revenue to 18 crores of annual revenue. Not only me, but thousands of other business owners have witnessed exponential growth after implementing the strategies and techniques suggested by him. At Infodigit, the team loves his win-win-win concept, and that has also helped us become a great place to work. Please join me in welcoming Rajiv Talreja, who is a brand by himself and the founder of several organizations, including QL1. He and his team at QL1 have been instrumental in converting several MSME businesses into large profitable organizations. Infodigit and I are just one example of such success stories that this person and his team have created. Rajiv, welcome to the Growth Genius Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Pleasure is mine, Kaushal. I mean, thank you for such a warm, lovely and elaborate introduction. I just believe that what we do is play the role of a catalyst in the journey of already amazing entrepreneurs like yourself. But thank you for such a wonderful introduction. And I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Thanks, Rajiv. And the pleasure is all mine. Rajiv, you have helped several MSME businesses over the last many years. The founder or the entrepreneur is the backbone of such enterprises. And I would like to understand your views about the qualities of a successful entrepreneur. What makes a successful businessman?
Like you rightly said in the question, that the founder is supposed to be the backbone of any business. But I think my job is to help founders who, instead of being the backbone, are becoming bottlenecks to their own business. So the key differentiator between what I would like to call as mediocre entrepreneurs and successful ones is that successful ones are the back. They are not at the forefront of everything. They are the ones who are orchestrating kind of directing the show. They are not the actors. That's something that is a hallmark of any successful business owner, because they have the ability to see a vision. They have the ability to get the best people on the job who can help them execute that vision. They have the ability to provide the resources in terms of strategy, systems and infrastructure to those people, and just watch amazing team members go out there and turn that vision into a reality. So I think the biggest quality of a successful business owner, according to me, is the willingness and the ability to not be a control freak, but be a director or an orchestrator of turning the vision into a reality.
Thanks, Rajiv. That really helps. And Rajiv, just I would love if you can go a little deeper, because I see many businesses over here or the business owners who make their businesses itself into a hobby and are stuck or rather stuck somewhere because they don't know how to expand their business further.
Yep.
In both the cases, they become just busy and go with the flow of their day-to-day lives.
Yep.
What would be your advice to become that particular person who, instead of becoming a bottleneck to their business, actually starts creating the blueprint for growth?
Yeah, so I think the advice is pretty straightforward. See, one is, it takes a realization for someone to understand that them being good at what they do is sometimes the biggest barrier for them building a great organization. See, say for example, I am a digital marketer and I set up a digital marketing agency and I'm good at digital marketing myself. Then high chances are that I will sit on every single project by myself, execute it myself, deliver the results to the client myself, right? Or say I'm a architect or an interior designer and I have great aesthetic sense and great space sense and all of that. And I then get hands-on and go into the details of every single design, executing, coordinating with labor, material, vendors, all of those kind of things. So I've always maintained this, that you can either be a practitioner in an industry or you can be an entrepreneur in an industry. A lot of people are being practitioners where they're doing stuff by themselves and are confusing themselves by calling themselves business owners. And they're actually building a trap of self-employment in the process. Now, it's a nice thing to say that I love what I do. But if your love for what you do is the biggest barrier for growth and scale, then it's just your love for yourself, not the love for your organization or your mission. I genuinely say to such entrepreneurs that if you're good at what you do, it's your responsibility to build something at scale so that you set the benchmark of quality in your industry. You add value to more and more customers and you create amazing workplaces and careers for people in that industry. So for that, you have to go beyond yourself, learn how to let go, learn how to build teams, build systems and build strategies, because these are skills. Most people are just having the skill of providing a good quality product or service. They don't have the skill of building an organization or business around that product or service. So if one takes a step back, introspects and asks themselves, what do I want to leave behind for myself? Is it just me doing what I love doing and making money out of it on a month-to-month basis? Or is it about me building an organization or a business in my industry? If the latter is your choice, then get out of the way. That's the most important advice I can give to an entrepreneur.
And this would be that one fundamental step which will help the business owner even creating business which would work without him in future if the need arises.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer that the job of an owner is to create the future, not to firefight in the present. So if you're firefighting in the present, it means you're the best on your team. It means everything is depending on you, is revolving around you. It means you've not done the foundational element of getting out of the day-to-day firefighting so you can focus on growth and expansion. Think about it. If a business owner is not focusing on growth and expansion, then who will? You can't expect your team member to do that. Now, some people justify this by saying, but Rajiv, at a certain stage, initially at least, you have to be involved. I always say this, you have to be involved till you've proven the merit of your product or service. The moment you've proven the merit of your product or service, ki my product works or my service solves a problem, then you can't continue playing that game. You have to become restless to step out of the day-to-day game and focus on building team system strategy so you can focus on growth.
True. And Rajiv, while you've explained it, this particular concept really well, I would also like to understand what is the role of a coach, a mentor in this entire gamut of things. Many times we see entrepreneurs struggling with their day-to-day lives and don't know that, hey, how do I proceed further from here? Where does the coach come into the picture?
I think for me, the role of a coach in the context of business is very similar to the context of sports, right? Like, we've heard of players having coaches. Why do the best of the best athletes, the best of the best sportsmen or sportswomen across the world have coaches? It's not because they don't know how to play the game. It's because they want those 1 degree shifts that will help them become a champion, right? The best analogy of this is you have children playing cricket on the streets and you have players playing cricket in the stadium, right? Now, the players playing cricket in the stadium have the coach, not the child who's playing cricket on the street. Doesn't mean the player does not know how to play. It's just that he's playing a bigger game, a game that matters. So in the same way, anyone who's building a business, one is you can build business from the point of view saying, I'm an owner. It has to be built by me, my intelligence, my effort, my capability. But you need to understand, nobody is Sarvaguna Sampan. Nobody has all the knowledge that they need. So you need an outsider's perspective to bring fresh ideas, to help you get clarity of your own goals and priorities, to help you stay on track by holding you accountable in your action, to support you when you face new challenges through new execution, and to handhold you to produce extraordinary results. So anyone who wants to play a game which is big, which is extraordinary, and wants to accelerate the pace at which they are playing that game, I think a coach is a requirement over there. I always say this, a coach is not a medicine you give to a sick person. It's not a crutch you hold to walk on when you have broken your leg. A coach is like a protein shake or an energy booster to a person who wants to be super fit in any context, in this case, business.
Wonderful. And Rajiv, one other thing which I've often seen entrepreneurs getting into a trap is usually that perfection trap. And I have spoken a lot, many times, about that particular thing myself, about the strategy which you tell us always, or the word which you have given us, that hey, perfection is a myth, progress is the key. Could you elaborate also a little about that particular thing? Because that's a master blaster for me, and I believe it would be a master blaster for many entrepreneurs and business owners too, because they do get trapped in this particular space.
Absolutely. So if you look at it, most people in the journey of building their business develop this crazy fear psychosis of, what if I hire a person and that person doesn't do the job? What if the salary is a waste? What if I build a system and nobody in the team follows the system? What if I explore some strategies for growth and those strategies fail? Then I'll lose money, I'll lose time, I'll lose reputation. So most people have this, what if it doesn't work? Now, where does this fear of what if it doesn't work come from? It comes from the desire of perfection. Okay, so what people want is, when I do X, I should get a perfect result or an output out of it. Now, if you understand, the desire is there, okay, but the desire doesn't translate into action because you want perfectionism. So say, for example, I have a thought, I need a team, everything is dependent on me, I need to hire people, I need to build teams. But if this, what if I hire, that person doesn't perform, what if I hire, the person learns and leaves, if all these doubts come in, it's coming because I have this desire saying, I need to hire and I need to bring in that perfect person who will solve all my problems. Now, none of us have a time machine to know whether that person we're going to hire is going to be the right bet or not. None of us have a time machine to know that system we're going to implement is going to simplify things or not. None of us have a time machine to know whether the strategy we're going to explore, say in marketing or in sales or in scale up, is going to work out or not. No one has a time machine. The only way to figure out if something works or not is by doing it. Now, in the process of doing it, will you win some? Will you lose some? Yes, you will. But even what you perceive as a loss is actually a lesson. And unless you don't learn those lessons, you're not going to get smarter. You're not going to get wiser. So the only way to learn is to take action. There's no manual for success saying step one, step two, step three, life is sorted. Everyone has to figure things out. You figure things out by doing. What is the biggest barrier of doing? The biggest barrier of doing is the desire for perfection. Because the moment this thought comes, what if it doesn't work? You're not going to take action. So you are where you were already. You have not moved even an inch. So I'm a big believer that instead of aspiring for perfection in every situation, and in return, in practicality, actually procrastinating your decisions and actions, if you just shift the paradigm and understand that perfectionism is a lie, it's a myth, it's a notion, it doesn't exist. The truth is, business is a game of progress, where version one is better than version none. Version 1 team is better than no team. Version 1 system is better than no system. Version 1 strategy is better than no strategy. When you embrace the paradigm of progress rather than the paradigm of perfectionism, you release pressure from yourself and you bring in this sense of agility to take decisions and actions. And that agility to take decisions and actions is what makes you wiser, stronger, smarter, and eventually helps you achieve the goals and results that you desire to achieve. So I always say this, that in business, the person who has the maximum appetite to handle shabbiness is the person who will create the maximum progress. If you can't handle shabbiness, you can't handle some unhappy customers, some money lost, some time lost, some reputation lost. If you can't handle that, you'll build a bubble for yourself where you'll be a control freak and you'll believe you're the only one who is the best in the world at what you do and nobody else can do it like you, and you live in that bubble forever. And after years of being in that bubble, suddenly this regret will seep in saying, shit, yaar, मैं अभी वहीं अटका हूँ, वाई हैवंट आई ग्रोन, लुक एट पीपल इन माई इंडस्ट्री, लुक एट दैट टीम मेंबर ऑफ माइन हु लर्न फ्रॉम मी, वेयर हैज ही गॉन. आई ऑलवेज से दिस एंड दिस इज माई ऑब्जर्वेशन इन रियलिटी आफ्टर वर्किंग विद मोर देन 25,000 बिजनेस ओनर्स. टैलेंटेड पीपल रेयरली बिल्ड स्केलेबल बिजनेसेस बिकॉज देयर सो मच ईगो अटैच टू देयर टैलेंट दैट दे वॉन्ट एवरीथिंग टू बी परफेक्ट, दैट दे आर नॉट प्लेइंग बिगर बोल्डर. They get stuck in their own mediocrity of doing everything by themselves. So that's my little rant on why perfectionism is actually a disease.
Perfect. Thanks. And Rajiv, the reason why I termed this as a master blaster for myself is because I was a person who was trapped in this particular perfection myth. And after attending your session, it really helped me kind of break those things. But yes, after growing from, let's say, that 1 CR to 18 CR, while I hold that particular thing, again, at this particular level, after even going that 18-20x, I again feel that now the business is getting stagnated. Is this a continuous process, or are there levels of perfection or progresses which are there in business, or is it just a...
So I'll tell you something, Kaushal. Say you, from 0 to 1 CR, was a journey where you were trying to prove your own skill to yourself. At 1 CR, you realize that skill hai, but this constant desire to prove my own skill to myself and sitting and doing everything by myself is actually my biggest enemy. So you dropped some behaviors and you said, let me build team, let me build system, let me go out there, market myself. You saw a spike from say 1 to 18. Now you are at 18 CR. Now at 18 CR, you probably have a very seamless team that manages projects of clients. You have enough of a track record of client success stories, which helps you attract newer customers. So you've kind of hit what I call as a plateau stage. Ki abhi 18 se year on year 10%, 15%, 20% by default organically will grow.
Yeah.
Now, from here, what you need is what I call Shiva mode. You know, they say Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, right? And Brahma is the creator. True. For us to get into the creation zone, first there has to be destruction. Okay. So what's the destruction? I'm not asking you to mess with what's working. I'm asking you to destroy the thought processes about what's possible with this business and look at newer thought processes and possibilities, right? So now is the time where you have to start questioning, saying, if someone had to build, let's just say you are in the space of helping people optimize organic marketing. If someone had to go and build a 200 crore company in this space, you have to reimagine what would their business model look like. What would their target customer, who would their target customer be? What would their services delivery model be? And automatically you'll have ideas that will pop. One idea may be geographical expansion. One idea may be turning service into product and commoditization of your services. One idea may be to franchise your agency model and help other people in your industry build a successful business using your brand name. One idea can be, I already said geographical expansion, so exploring overseas markets where the ticket value can be high. One idea can be to build your own personal brand, like someone like a Neil Patel, where you become the personal brand and then you drive traffic and you offer services. So you see, you have to reimagine. I believe this podcast you're doing with me is also a part of that reimagination process. Right? So I think we all in life will see what I believe is a curve of spike, plateau, little bit of a fall with new experiments, but then you master those new experiments and another spike. Most people get discouraged with the fall of new experiments and then I'm unnecessarily getting enthusiastic and adventurous here. Let's stick to what's working. But what starts happening is this: though the business grows 10-20% organic, the passion reduces 10-20% organically as well. Because we are all, at the end of the day, souls that thrive on evolution. And when we don't evolve, we feel we are kind of diminishing in our own eyes. So, so you're at a plateau. Explore some new experiments, which will take probably from 18 crores to 16. And you'll be like, shit, our profitability, we eroded because of this new experiment. But when you master that, you'll see the next spike.
Is Rajiv Talreja always an idea factory like this, or is Is it because Rajiv Talreja has that particular experience or has faced this kind of situations in life? That's the reason Rajiv can give solution to any such business problem.
I think I have a very beautiful advantage, which is the exposure I carry to the number of businesses we work with. So because of the diversity of industries we are working with in terms of coaching, say at this point of time, we have clients from 192 different types of businesses. You have all types of businesses there: manufacturing, trading, retail services, professional services, IT, F&B, startups, agriculture businesses. So what happens is that that exposure automatically makes you smarter, because then your ability to process businesses, connect the dots is beautiful. It's like this, right? Like, say if you break the news to your friend saying, I'm getting married, and your friend is a lawyer, he look at marriage from a legal point of view saying, prenup agreement karwa le, so tomorrow if things go south, you are protected. If your friend is a gynecologist, then they'll say, bhai, pehle checkup karwa lena ki are both of you conducive for reproduction or not. So it becomes a lens that you wear. Now, as a business coach, the lens that I wear is dissecting businesses, dissecting strategies. So what happens is, naturally, in a business conversation, I'm the man with the ideas in the room. Now you put me in a social environment and you ask me to say cheers with champagne glasses and just randomly engage in small talk or casual chatter, then I go into a shell. I'm an introvert over there, right? So this is my zone. This is my game. So I'm good at playing this because this is all that I do every single day.
Thanks, Rajiv. That really is helpful. Rajiv, my next question would be around those business owners and leaders who have mastered the operational aspect of product and service, but do not know how to sell it, or they are limited to just the word of mouth publicity. I was one such entrepreneur when I joined the PACE program in 2018. Definitely the one solution for all these people would be the PACE program. But if you had to give them one piece of free advice, what would that be?
See, for a business owner who's an operational expert and has not considered what else can they do to kind of scale up their business, the one single advice I would say is prioritize marketing. And it starts with prioritizing marketing in your head. It's not just to say do marketing. It's first make it a priority here. And I'll break this down from what I would say are two types of entrepreneurs who are operationally very good. Okay. So there is one set of entrepreneurs who I would call struggling entrepreneurs, because they're in the first 3-5 years of their journey. They still haven't built that kind of a track record of their own product or service, which gives them enough goodwill to start generating leads consistently. So even though they generate word of mouth, it's very fragmented. There's no consistency over there. So these I'll call as struggling entrepreneurs, because they're struggling because they're playing the game of month-to-month survival. They're always worried saying, where will I get the next month's money from? Who is my next project going to be with? So they're always stuck in that battle. And they may have a good quality product or service. They have great operational expertise. Then you have another category of people who've been around in any business for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And because they've been around for 10, 20 years, they have enough of a track record, enough of a goodwill in the market, because of which they're getting enough business from their existing customers or are generating consistent word of mouth referrals, because of which they're not prioritizing marketing. True. Now, the reason I would say prioritize marketing to both these types of entrepreneurs are different. The first set, which is a struggling survival entrepreneurs, would be you need to do marketing so that you're grabbing your target customers' attention, you're showcasing your capability, you're establishing credibility in their minds, and you're creating curiosity for your product or service so you generate leads consistently. So for the struggling entrepreneurs, marketing becomes a necessity for consistent lead generation, therefore consistent income generation. But for the stable, successful entrepreneurs who've been around for 10, 20 years, they may argue saying, when I'm getting enough business from my existing clients, why should I bother marketing? The reason you should prioritize marketing at that stage is for two things. Number one, when you're only depending on your existing clients, you have a very low bargaining power. And that existing client over a period of time controls the relationship. They control the price point, they control the payment terms, and you can't even be tough with them when they're delaying payments, because they are expecting you to understand and support. So when you start marketing, if you're a stable, successful business, and you always have a healthy pipeline of leads and inquiries, that will give you enough confidence and conviction to charge the price and to earn the profit that you deserve and to demand the payments on the terms that you desire. But if you're only depending on existing clients, you're always worried saying, if I'm a little tough with this guy, what if he gets offended, goes to a competitor? So you're always playing the game to keep that customer with you, not necessarily optimize the returns from that customer for your business. But when you market, you have a pipeline of leads, then you are working with the best because you are the best, right? The other reason for a stable, successful entrepreneur to focus on marketing would be that marketing gives you enough evidence about how much demand you can create. And that evidence of the demand that you can create for your product or service then gives you data-driven conviction to reinvest in the business for further expansion. So that's why I say marketing is like a medicine for anyone. And if you're operationally good and you're just waiting for the world to recognize how great you are, well, times are changing. Today, newer age businesses are smarter at marketing, even though they may not have the operational capability that you have. And they will outmarket you and outbeat you. And then you'll feel this sense of regret and remorse saying, Kalyug aa gaya hai, hum jaise acche logon ko dhanda nahi mil raha hai, but jisko kuch nahi aata, wo log dhanda leke ja rahe. The person to blame is the person who's not marketing. So I feel marketing is that one key advice for any operational expert. If you're good at what you do, it's your responsibility to market yourself.
Really wonderfully said, Rajiv. And this is not only true for MSME and small businesses, but even large brands.
Absolutely.
Who are falling into this particular trap that, okay, we'll just do the conventional things in terms of marketing and then at least let it grow. But yes, many of those businesses are, as you rightly said, are growing at that 10-15%, then that they're not breaking it.
Yeah.
One such thing, at least to break this particular zone, you had shared with us is called magnetic marketing. We were blessed with this kind of knowledge from your side. But at least for the people who are not aware about this, could you at least help them demystify this term magnetic marketing?
So I look at marketing as there are two approaches to marketing. One is a hygienic approach to marketing and the other is the magnetic approach. And I can't define magnetic without defining hygienic, so I'll give both perspectives. Hygienic marketing strategies are those strategies which are standard, which are basic, which everybody uses. These are push strategies, okay? Where, say, telemarketing is a push strategy, field marketing is a push strategy, email marketing is a push strategy, joining a business referral networking organization is a push strategy, or participating in an exhibition or an expo is a push strategy, right? Where you're pushing, okay? Today, I would consider social media as also a push strategy because it's become a basic norm for people to use social media to kind of market their businesses, right? Magnetic, on the other hand, as the name suggests, magnetic, which means it's a pull strategy where you are creating a differentiating position in the mind of the target audience in a manner where the target customer wants to associate with you. Okay. So I'll give an example. Today, you see the number of businesses doing podcast shows. Podcasting is a pull strategy. Because if I, as a business owner, I'm doing podcasts and I'm hosting experts on that podcast, I'm building a brand positioning of a thought leader, and I am opening doors with decision makers and influencers who would be prospect customers for my business in a B2B environment. In a B2C environment, it's a great thought leadership kind of a category building for yourself. So podcasting is a pull strategy. If someone follows your podcast and they watch your podcast show, tomorrow you land up in a situation where you have to sell to them. You don't have to prove your credibility because the perception is already established, right? So that is what I would call as a magnetic strategy.
Thanks, Rajiv, for sharing that. And as I told you earlier, the Growth Genius is a part of this particular baby, which you had suggested a long time back that, hey, go for some magnetic marketing strategy. And thanks to you and your team to help us with this kind of strategy. So thanks a lot for the great work which you and your team are doing.
Pleasure is mine.
Yeah. Rajiv, one other question which I would like to ask you today is, and this is coming from your team only. So I was filling up the form last week for the next Proficon, which you are hosting in the month of December. And one of the questions which your team asked us to fill was, what have been some of your biggest failures as an entrepreneur? I was quite intrigued to understand if Rajiv Talreja had made any mistakes in his life And if yes, what?
Well, quite a few. Like they say, right, that every master was once a disaster. So I kind of break down my 17 years of entrepreneurship into two parts. The first 10 years where I made disastrous amount of mistakes, like it was like the most stupidest things I would have done. But I'm very grateful to those first 10 years because that kind of built the depth, the foundation, and the understanding that makes me very relatable to the work that I do today for the last 7 years, right? So if I had to break down my mistakes, I think the first big mistake I made very early in my journey was for a long time, I undersold myself. I undercharged for the services my businesses would provide purely out of this insecurity and fear, saying, what if the client finds it expensive? What if they reject? What if they go to a competitor? And I carried this fear because I think there was something broken in my money psychology. I didn't learn how to value myself or the value we were adding to our clients. So that was my first big mistake. The second big mistake, if I look back at the last 17 years as an entrepreneur, was to not market myself for the first 10 years. It was a very expensive mistake, and it was a big realization for me because I came from this traditional school of thought ki, if your work is good, if your product is good, if your service is good, people will automatically buy. But I realized there's so much noise in the market. People don't even have the time and patience to search for which is the best product or service. They are just going directly to the which is the best marketed product or service. So I said, if I'm good at what I do, then I need to market myself. That was a big lesson for me. That was a big change in my journey as an entrepreneur. And the third big mistake that I probably have made in these last 17 years is, while I am a person who's naturally very trusting and giving in a relationship, and I'm very forthcoming to give, to trust, to care, one important lesson I've learned is that you shouldn't change who you are. You should be forthcoming to give, to care, to trust, to love, to provide. But you should also evaluate whether the person whom you are providing to in a business context is reciprocating that or not. Because if that person is not reciprocating, then you are being used and you are then giving not out of your own desire to give, but because it's somewhere becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy that, dekho, main itna deta hu, main itna karta hu apno ke liye and all of that. In a business context, I think you have to play the role of a mirror. You have to hold people accountable and you have to draw the line and sometimes say, hey, boss, this is not working out. And I think I made that mistake that I've been overtly forthcoming in giving, caring, but not being assertive to demand a reciprocation sometimes from people who are close to me. It's something I'm learning. It's something that I've become wiser by making these mistakes. So no complaints.
Okay. Rajiv, the third one would be applicable for many people. While definitely marketing and other stuff is definitely, you've answered it to some extent.
Yep.
But this particular third mistake is something which many people don't know where to draw the line.
Yeah. And I'd like to draw a disclaimer there. You know, what happens is when you are a person who naturally gives and cares and provides, and say you don't get the reciprocation, you can easily turn bitter as well and oscillate to the other extreme, saying people are not worth trusting, pehle apni socho, you shouldn't trust everybody, and that makes you who you are not, which is again what you don't enjoy. And I've seen a lot of people oscillate from this to that. I think for me, what I found peace in is to say, I will still not change who I am. Okay. I will still give, I will still trust, I will still care, I will still support. All I would look for is early indicators of reciprocation. Ki jisko main de raha hu, jiske liye main kar raha hu, usme kya wo humility hai, kya wo acceptance hai, kya wo desire or commitment hai to work on themselves and contribute back in that relationship. Because if they don't, then you are breeding a freeloader. Tum ek fukatiye ko paal rahe ho, fir wohi fukatiya wapas aake tumhe kaatega aur bolega ki abhi palna band kyun kiya. So, okay. I will still give, but I will draw a boundary early by being more aware about evaluating the person opposite. Okay, do they deserve this giving or not?
Perfectly fair. And how do you evaluate that particular?
See, it's a lot of things, right? Like say, for example, if I have a team member on my team and I'm giving, providing and all of that. And in reciprocation, the person saying, yeah, Rajiv, I feel guilty. Okay, you are providing so much, but I'm not able to contribute back to the business. The only time I give them permission to feel guilty is once. 3 months later, they again say, I'm still feeling guilty. Then they've not worked on themselves, right? So there has to be progress. Okay, you can't have the person singing the same song saying, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty. But wo guilt mein kha to raha hai. Right? So you have to see, is there change? First time, guilt admission. Second time, probably improvement and progress. Third time, commitment and desire. Say nothing's working, to have the humility to take a step back and say, I probably don't deserve to be at this position. I want to go one level lower and I want to learn and come back up. Right? So you will see that in the right kind of person to whom you should continue giving.
Perfect. That really helps, Rajiv. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Rajiv, one other interesting thing that is going in the Indian economy these days is the Indian startups and the VC funding. I was just going through this news that Indian startups raised only $7 billion of funds in the last 9 months, that is January to September of 2023. Visibles in the first 9 months of 2022, they had raised $22 billion, right? So $7 billion versus $22 billion. And even 2021 was at $27 billion for the same months. Now with VC money that was fueling the startups, reducing since the last few years, and the startups are in need to help understand how to sustain their business, which they have increased over the last many years with the help of VC funding.
Yeah.
What would be your advice to these kind of startup founders?
Firstly, I'm happy for them. Last year when this was at its peak, I was probably one of the few people in this country who was raising a voice saying that, look, this is a bubble and it's going to burst. And it did burst. And I'm glad, not because I am anti-startups, but because I feel this kind of a correction is required in any environment where there is unrealistic fantasies that are being sold. See, what has happened is, I think 2020, 2021 were rare years, okay? Where money was flowing easily. Now you see the interest rates in the US are high, and naturally that's like the Gangotri of the startup ecosystem. So when interest rates are high, capital gets expensive, and capital dries up for people. Plus, what happened is with a lot of partners, they had given funds to all these VCs for a 7-year period. And the encashing was supposed to happen, let's just say 22, 23. And the encashing didn't happen. So there was a conservatism that came in there also. Ki, boss, is my capital even safe with a VC? Right? With the real source of fund, people who were really providing those funds. So I believe that even if your desire is to build a startup, you got to build it like a business, like a micro business. You got to build for the customer, not build for the VC. Why do you need money? Why do you need to be in a hurry to capture the market? You don't. It's a notion, it's a myth, it's a perception that has been created. Okay? You build with the fundamentals. Once you build with the fundamentals and get your business profitable at the level of every unit, then automatically the money will follow, right? What I think the perception has changed for a lot of founders and the culture shift that is not healthy is ki only if I raise money will I be able to build businesses. Yeah. I'm like, business is not a new activity, right? Business, at least from an Indian context, we were the creators of trade-based businesses before even currencies were created, right? Yeah. So businesses have always worked on value exchange. They haven't worked on valuation. Today, what's happened is, unfortunately, with so much over-glamorization of fundraising, that people think that's the benchmark of success. No, that's a sign of a liability. When you have borrowed someone's money, it may not be a financial liability on your head because everything gets burned down. Nobody can come and seize your personal assets and demand money from you. But it's definitely an emotional and a mental liability. Tum kisi se paise le rahe ho at a certain valuation. How are you going to justify it, maintain it, sustain it, and grow it beyond that? That's a $1 million question to ask. So I would say that the real fabric of entrepreneurship is about people learning how to navigate their way of building a business through limited resources. That is entrepreneurship. 100 crore freebies pe kharch karke aur digital marketing mein kharch karke 10 crore ka turnover dikhana koi badi baat nahi hai, right? The real game is to navigate through the limitation of resources. So that's when you'll see real entrepreneurs emerging.
Perfect. And for these entrepreneurs now who have gone into that valuation game and now struggling to get and create a business, is there some specific recommendation that you would have in terms of at least, let's say, enrolling to the PACE program or the MBA program? What would you suggest for them?
I would be happy to help such entrepreneurs. So I'm not going to use this podcast as a marketing pitch. But if anybody needs that kind of support, they can always reach out to me on any social media platform. But I would also say that I have been learning from some of these funded entrepreneurs about how they're navigating through this interesting situation. And it's kind of sad to see, because I know entrepreneurs who've been backed by some of the biggest VCs in the world who have gone into a mode which we call quiet quitting today. So the concept of quiet quitting, people talk about it in the context of employees, where employees are mentally, emotionally switched off, saying, I'll do my 9-to-5 and get out of here. I don't care about growth. I don't care about anything. Mujhe mere mahine ka mil raha hai, bas. Strangely, I'm seeing funded entrepreneurs going to quiet quitting, saying, kuch nahi hone wala hai, IPO leke jayenge, public ka paisa lootenge, naam kharab hoga, next round to hone wala hai nahi. And they've kind of quietly quit in their head about their own business, which was at one point of time their passion. And they're looking at ki, theek hai, secondary mein thoda paisa nikal lenge, us paise se kisi lounge ya fine dine restaurant mein invest karke lifestyle business karenge, aur paise ghar leke jayenge, theek hai yaar, focus on lifestyle businesses. Ye naam ke liye achha tha, ye interviews ke liye achha tha, ye conferences mein baat karne ke liye, invitations ke liye achha tha, bas ho gaya mera. That's a very dangerous signal for me.
True.
Okay, of quiet quitting. And that is something that a lot of funded founders who would not admit it publicly, but that's their current emotional and mental reality.
Rajiv, one last question from my side, at least. What would be that one last message which you would like to share with our audience today, or the learning which you would say that they should all take away from you?
Now you are going to make me sound like a preacher, but okay, at the risk of sounding like a preacher, all I'm going to say is this, that, you know what, money has value when you don't have it. When you make money, a lot of people who make money still don't find inner peace and joy. So I would say that keep money and joy as two separate tracks in your life. Money is important, it is critical, but don't attach your happiness to money, because trust me, no matter how much money you make, you try to find happiness there, you're finished. You'll have deep emotional crashes. So no matter what stage of the journey you are in building your business, stick to the fundamentals. Take care of your health. Spend quality time in your relationships. And get better at building your business. And know what gives you happiness. That clarity is very important. If you think a few zeros in your bank account is going to give you happiness, I promise you and can give it to you in writing, it will not. I would say, prioritize money and earn that money by becoming a better version of your own skills and knowledge in your business, because money is a reflection of the scale of business you build, and the scale of business is a reflection of the capabilities you hold, and learning that is in your control through mentors, through coaches, through courses, through books. Learning is in an individual's control. So make that money by becoming a better version of your own capabilities and knowledge. And on the other hand, know your priorities. What matters to you? Okay. A good health, the people you love, and a time of your life where you experience this planet to the fullest. If you keep the fundamentals in focus on a daily basis, you don't need anyone like me to tell you what you should focus on.
Perfect, Rajiv. That was wonderful. Thanks a lot for being on this particular show. It was really a pleasure to have you here. Just one last thing, while I understand you are always a search away, any specific place where you would prefer the audience gets in touch with you or your team?
If people want to explore just learning from me, then I would say it would be my YouTube channel, because there I do a lot of long format content just to teach and give back to entrepreneurs. If people like to connect and have a conversation and explore how they can take our support, then I would say a message on Instagram. And in both these places, I go by the name Rajiv Talreja, Rajivtalrej. So yeah, I'm a click away.
Perfect. That was really wonderful, Rajiv. Thanks once again for being a part of this show. And I really appreciate you getting on this particular show and sharing such deep insights with our audience today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kaushal. And I love the line of questioning. So more power to you and this podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Growth Genius. I hope you learned how to build more profitable and larger businesses from Rajiv Talreja today. If you have any questions for Rajiv Talreja or for us, please include them in the comment section and we'll get back to you. Thank you. Now go out there and create growth for yourself and your organization. I'll see you in the next episode. Thanks.